Okay, this class, well, we got a lot of empty seats today. Whew. Well, it's trapping, I guess. This class serves a dual role, dual purpose of letting those who have not been through the narrative and then the story, say the stories and the applications to our lives, come in and go through that class, but also serves as a review for the teachers who are teaching this quarter. And so that's kind of a dual purpose here. So, in that light, take 2 minutes here and do a little thinking about teaching for just a minute. Years ago, we used to teach a teacher training class, and we talked about that class. Teaching is easy as pie. Teaching is easy as pie. And we looked at each one of those letters stood for something, as you might think. And the P stood for present. So when a teacher comes into the class, they get to present material to the students. So, now, how do you present material to your class? I can lecture to you. I'm presenting material to you. All right, what else can I do? I can give you a handout like we did last Wednesday night. This is all the kings we studied so far and their dates and were they good kings or bad kings and whatever. So I presented some more material to you. I can drill you and ask questions. I'm getting you to do some presenting then maybe when I ask you questions there. What else?
Picture cards.
Yeah. And the little kids, I use the cards. Okay, I'm presenting lessons, material to you then. What else? I can use the PowerPoint slide to present material to you. I can read you a story. I can have someone else read the story from the scriptures. All these different ways to present material, and you've got to take that then and adapt it to the level of the students that you're with. Okay? It'd be hard to go into a kindergarten class and get much done if all I did was sit there and lecture. Some of you know it better than I do because I don't teach a kindergarten class, but I can a little imagine here that they wouldn't last very long with a 45-minute lecture. Okay? So their attention span is not near as long as adults. Okay? So the P stands for present. When I go into a class, I've got to present material to that class. In some shape, form, or fashion, I've got to get material across to the class. Okay, the I stands for what? Anybody remember that? Involve. I involve a class. So how do I involve a class? What do I do with this class a lot of times? I ask questions, like I'm doing right now, right? Okay. Have you read scripture? I get you involved in doing things. When Jeff gets to the pulpit, every sermon, what's the first thing he does? Turn to such and such. What does he want you to do? He wants you to get involved in that sermon. Even though it's a lecture, he wants you involved in there, flipping the scriptures, looking with him. So how else can I involve my students? What do I hand you every time I come to class just about? Reminds me of where it is, okay. I did it Wednesday nights. Where was it? What do I hand you when I come in class almost every time? A worksheet. What do I want you to do with it? I want you to sit there and fill it out as we go through a class. How else could I use that worksheet? Hand it out a fourth time and that you study at home, okay? I can walk in the classroom and hand it out to you first thing and say, okay, take 5 minutes and go through and fill out these questions. Then we'll talk about them. So I've had you fill out that sheet on your own as you go through there. What else can I do with that sheet? I can hold it till later and say, okay, we covered the class in the last 5 minutes. All right, take this and run through it for review. And let you go through and answer the questions then. So I want you to paper can be used in several different methods there. So lots of different ways I can involve. Jesus had a knack of when somebody asked him a question. What did he do a lot of times? He answered a question with a question. Yeah. They would ask him a question, he'd turn around and say, oh, but what about such and such? So what have you done then? Instead of answering a question, he's got them to do what? They've got to roll their wheels a little bit, right? And get things going there. Okay, so I present him information and I involve a class. I don't sit up and just lecture forever. Now that's one method, but it's not generally done for most of the classes that you'll be teaching. And what's the E? Evaluate. How do I know that you're learning anything? I look into your eyes, okay. I can read the expressions off your face, and you can your kids when you're teaching smaller classes. I can look and see. I can ask you questions and see what kind of answers I get. I can give you a quiz for that go. We don't do that a lot here, but I mean, you could fill out a sheet type thing. We're going to give a A, B, C, D, F type play in Bible classes, certainly, but I could get feedback from you that way. So there are ways I can evaluate and see if I'm getting anything across to you. With that. So anyhow, just a quick little thing. And the attention spans, like I said, attention spans are different. So if I'm teaching a class a little bit of kids, I've got to keep changing those methods real frequently. When I'm teaching a class of older ones, I can sit there and do more of just one or two things there. So anyhow, just a little thing to get cranked up this morning. Okay. Let's pass out this sheet. I was about to forget where I was there. Here. Okay. Everybody got a pencil? I hope that's come to my classes. You don't need a pencil. All right. I'd like you to take that piece of paper this time. We're going to do a little different to start with this morning. There's two more. Come in, Jerry, if you got some horse of spares up here. There you go, Jay. There you go. One more. Take that piece of paper you've got and turn it over. We'll start with the back side first today. And on that back side, make two columns. Put the J at the top of one of them and the I at the top of the other one. And that might stand for Judah and Israel. Good thing. There you go, Bill. Appreciate that involvement there. Okay. So, now, how many kings of Judah have we studied so far? Judah. Four. The four blank lines, I think four names in them. You're visiting and haven't been here? And just hold on. Okay. So, down the left side where you got J for Judah, I need four blanks, I need four kings' names. Now, on the right side, Israel has studied more kings. I guess how many so far? I think it's about seven, if I remember right. Yep, seven. That's right. So, I need a list of seven names over there. Okay? Yeah, I see eyeballs cutting toward this side of the room up here, you know. Everybody's, they're right up here on the wall. Everybody says, I can't figure them out. I can't read that from this angle. Okay, so down the left side, kings of Judah. Who have you got? Rehoboam, Abijah, Asa, Jehoshaphat. Okay. Now, how many of those are good? Two, the last two. Rehoboam was not, and Abijah was not. Asa, 49 years are good, and then Jehoshaphat, we actually ran in now, we'll get to that in a minute. On the right hand side, start off with who's first? Jeroboam, Nadab, Baasha, Elah, Zimri, Amri, and good old Ahab. Okay, that's not good old Ahab, it's any good Ahab. None of those were good on that side over there. All right, Zimri. How long Zimri like reign? 1 week. He was the shortest of the bunch there. All right. So Ahab is reigning now. All right. That'll warm us up a little bit. All right. What has just happened in the class Wednesday night? What big event? Elijah's life here. Showdown on Mount Carmel. Okay. And showdown there, he called the prophets of Baal out and said, okay, let's both prepare a sacrifice here on the altars. And after all, you go first. Okay? You call on your God, call on God of Baal to come down and to set fire to the altar and to the sacrifice, and we'll truly know that Baal is God. So, what did they do? Called and called and called and wound up doing what else? Cutting themselves, slashing themselves. How long did they try? All day long. And the results? None. Okay. Nothing came out of it. So Elijah said, okay, do what to mine before I start? Pour water on it. How much water on it? Three times they went and poured water on it. Filled a trench up with water around it. And what did he do? Any shouting or cutting or... No. Just a simple prayer of the Lord that says, okay, show them who's God. Okay. And what results in? Not only did the sacrifice burn up, but licked up the water and the altar and the whole thing. Now, after that then, what did Elijah tell them to do? Execute all, how many of them was it? 450 of them. Execute them, okay. So, question number one on your paper there is what we just talked about. What has just happened on Mount Carmel? The great victory that Elijah had over the prophets of Baal, showing that God was God. Now, having just been through that, what do you think the people ought to be thinking in their mind? I mean, is it enough enough? I mean, haven't you been shown now what's what?
They have been what?
They have been but. That's about right, okay. So Ahab goes back and tells Miss Jezebel about it. And that's number two on there. What is her reaction? By the way, if you're missing, I'm behind here. We are in 1 Kings 19 right now. All right. So I'm out of Carmel's where they were. Get started up here. I get caught up here. So Ahab goes back and tells Jezebel what's happened and all the Baal prophets being killed. And what's her reaction? By tomorrow, what? You'll be dead too. If I got anything to do with it, by this time tomorrow, you'll be like they are. So she threatens to kill him by the next day. By the next day. Okay. Now, Elijah says, we got a problem here. So what does he do? He leaves. He runs for his life. Where'd he go? To Beersheba. Now, when you think about, if there's two cities that come that are associated together, one's for the far north and one's the far south. They are Dan to Beersheba. If you want to talk about the entire length of the land of Canaan, you talk about from Dan to Beersheba, very north, very south. So, Beersheba's going to be way, way, way down in the south. So, where are they now? Mount Carmel, which is not quite as far up as Dan, but it's way in the north. So, he's got a long run he goes out to Beersheba. All right. Jerusalem here. All right. Check them. See the Galilee. Mount Carmel, he goes down to Beersheba. Okay. So that's number three. And he gets there. He leaves his servant there at Beersheba. At Beersheba. And he goes into the wilderness. Now, what's his condition at this time? Think about where he is now. He just had this great victory. He's executed 450 prophets of this false god on a high. You'd think he would be. But what squelched it all for him? Jezebel threatened to kill his life. Okay, so he runs. He flees to Beersheba, flees for his life, leaves his servant there, goes a day further down south into the wilderness there. And number four, what's he asked God to do? Take my life. Why? Look what I've done. We just had this great victory. You showed the people who's God this tremendous victory, and now I can't even enjoy it because this Jezebel is out to kill me, and God take his life. Okay. So he goes to sleep. An angel wakes him up. There's food there. There's a cake and there's some water. And the angel tells him to wake up and to eat. This is repeated. The second time, there's one little piece added to it. Why is the angel telling him to stop to take nourishment? He's got a great journey going on. Okay, he's got a great journey going on. Now, where's he come from already? From Mount Carmel all the way down to Beersheba. Long trip already. Think about walking or riding on a camel or whatever he's riding on. I mean, it's a long journey for him. That time. He's coming. He's got another journey to go on there. So he goes on down to Mount Horeb. A couple of the names for that. Mount Sinai, and it's also called the Mount of God. Okay, so the term you see for us there, the Mountain of God. Mount Horeb. Now, let's bring that up to history. What else has happened to Mount Horeb? Mount Sinai. So the children of Israel camped all that time. They were given the four things we talked about several times over and over and over. But what experience did Moses have there? Where he got the burning bush, God appeared to him right before this. That's where he got the law. And what relationship did he have with God there? Made him face to face. Okay? So kind of keep that in mind now as we come in and think about Elijah. What he's facing happened to him here now. So he goes on down to the mountain of God. So the other map had Mount Carmel at the very top, Beersheba at the very bottom. This is not even on that same map. We now go from Beersheba way down here to Mount Sinai. Okay. Long trip. One thing I read, somebody said 40-day journey. So, down to there. You get a long trip down to Beersheba. So, God speaks to him. What did he ask him? What are you doing here, Elijah? And what did he answer? All is good for God. I've done all this good. You know, I've done all this. Thought we had this thing conquered. They ought to kill me. I can't take it anymore. I'm by myself. It's hard. I worked hard. It's done no good. Look where we are here. I'm on one left. Now they want to kill me. All right, number five. While at Mount Sinai, or Mount Horeb, God had a message. Now, three or four things are going to happen here. God's going to appear. Yeah, Elijah's in his cave. He comes out maybe to the front of the cave and appears here. And God appears, let me rephrase that. What comes first? A strong wind. A strong, strong wind. We had one like that come here on kind of the other night. I mean, it got pretty strong here. God went in the wind. What's next? An earthquake. That would get some folks' attention. God was in the earthquake. And what's next? Fire. But God was not any of those. But God was in what? Still small voice. Still small voice where he speaks to Elijah. So he speaks to Elijah now, and what's he asking again? Same thing again. What are you doing here, Elijah? What are you doing here, Elijah? And what's his answer again? Same thing. I worked hard. It's done no good. I'm the one left. They want to kill me. Okay. Now, put yourself in Elijah's place here. Put yourself in Elijah's place. Had this great victory. Jezebel's out to get you. You traveled all this way. You left your servant. You went down this strong wind, this earthquake, this fire, and then God speaks to you in this small voice. Says, Elijah, what are you doing here? What did you tell him? I tried hard. It didn't do any good. They're going to kill me. Now,
all these times, though, Elijah never failed to do what God told him.
No, and we're going to take this a minute. That's a good point. Hang on to that a minute. What did God do, though? How did God react toward Elijah? Look here. I've had enough of this whining. Yeah. Right. He picks up and says, no. We'll get that back to the point in a minute there. No, you're not alone. Okay? I'm taking care of things.
That's more importantly, he gave him something to do.
That's where we're going next, okay? What did he tell him to do? Got something for you to do, Elijah. Okay? What's he been saying? I've already been doing. I've been working. Ain't done any good yet. Got through with him? Nope. Go. Got something else for you to do. Put him on a mission. So what did he tell him to do? Number six in there. Go anoint three men. Who are they? Hazael to be king over Syria. Who's king there now? Then Hadad. We'll get to him in a minute. That's the next chapter. Okay. Next one. Jehu to be king over Israel. Who's there now? Ahab. Okay. And then thirdly, Elisha to do what? To take your place. Perhaps Elijah's getting old now. You might gain from that. Okay. Elijah, take your place. Go get that done. Any further, he says. Somebody say something? Yeah.
The fact that he said, you and I, you would raise the question as to what his background was, whether or not he was a priestly.
Yeah.
Also, the fact that he offered the sacrifice.
Yeah. Thought about that, Bill. Good point.
No,
I have not thought about that point. Just very rather. Alright, what else did he tell him? Now, I've got something for you to do, but look here. Get over yourself, pity stuff, because what? I got 7,000 more that haven't bowed the knee to Baal yet. You're not the only ones out there. We just had this great victory at Mount Carmel. Faith and courage was shown there. And that didn't convince the people. They didn't turn from Baal. Now, this point made earlier, God's very patient with him, apparently. Don't scold him, don't rebuke him. Gives him a mission to go do. Now, stop the slide up here because I think God's lesson for Elijah. What is God's lesson? What's he trying to tell Elijah?
One thing, he's never alone.
He's never alone. Because, who's with him?
God.
God is, okay. And it may not be in the strong wind or the earthquake or the fire, but I'm still there. Maybe it's in a still small voice, but I'm still there. Okay? What else? I'm in control. I like that. Okay? That's not on there. So it's paper up here. Excuse me. I'm in control. I've got it on a slider up here. God says, I'm in control. Okay? I'm in control. And look at, I guess, not verse 18 there, where he says the 7,000 knees haven't bowed down yet, the veil. Says, I'm in control. I know what's going on. I've got something for you to go do. You've been working, yeah, it looks like it hadn't done much good. Some more good than you think. There's still 7,000 out there that haven't given up to Jezebel and her false gods yet. But now we've got something else to do. Go take care of this mission I got for you. So what's the application? What we do? What we get out of all this? We work and we work and we work. And this thing does no good, but what? We just keep working. Okay?
We're not responsible for the result.
We just got to get to work, right? God's going to take care of the rest of it. And there's never time to give up. We just keep plugging on. Time to say something. I just feel the wheels going over here.
I agree with Bill. What the results look like. God has defined work.
There's lots there to do. Just keep on doing it. Now, what if Elijah was only one left? He's 7,000 a hole then. I mean, from worse off he thinks he is. He's got a lot more work to do, right? So he's got to keep going and going and going and going and going.
Now, I think very rarely are things as bad as we think they are. I'm not saying never, because sometimes they're worse than you. You know? But very rarely are things as bad as dark. You get anxious and depressed, and I don't think that's a solid biblical attitude or a biblical barrier. But there's a lot more in our minds than that.
That's what Elijah did. He made it a lot worse than what it really was. Yeah. Now, just right after getting him, that's pretty bad.
Yeah.
That's pretty bad.
Yeah.
Like Gary's over here. He still got the one that counts, right?
Elijah expected the clergy that began there at the Mount Carmel, and he expected that just the catalyst.
Right.
Would have
keep going.
They have Jezebel out of office and that thing's right. But Elijah seems to have fallen into the same trap that Moses fell into. He felt the crush of the responsibility without realizing that God is there.
Yeah.
And it's the same, as you pointed out, it's the same trap that we can fall into. We don't feel like we have a success.
It's almost like Elijah didn't learn the lesson on Mount Carmel. He's fearing Jezebel and the Baal, knowing he is God. Okay, Elisha. Number 8. Get in number 8 here. Elisha, we're going to start getting this tongue twister now. Elisha is out plowing with oxen. How many? 12 yoke. Now, I read two different things on this. First thing I read gave me the impression he had a 12 yokes, you know, 6 pair, you would 12 oxen or something. He was actually plowing behind. But another place over there, it's like there are 12 yoke of oxen in the field plowing. You know, several 12 different yokes, sort of a pairs of oxen out there in the field. He had one of them. So I don't know which way to read this, probably to interpret that, but he's out. And one place I read said this would indicate wealth in the family. They had that many oxen there to plow the field with. So again, take those for what they're worth there. He's out planting the field with oxen. So, how did Elijah call Elisha? What did he do? Walked by, threw his mantle across him, and apparently, like, kept going. The kind of impression you get. Now, did Elisha know what this meant? Yeah, it must have been something that was a common type thing to do or something, a custom, because Elisha knew immediately what it was, what he was doing. And what did he say? Let me go tell my folks goodbye. Okay? And Elijah have any problem with that? Not redundant period, really. Okay? So what did Elisha do then? Took the oxen.
Made a
piece. So the field working there. He took the wood from the yoke and whatever and used it to burn, and he cooked and boiled the meat, it says. Now, how long would this take? Coming through my mind. Okay, no microwaves. Okay, no run down and drive through and get it. It would take some time to kill 2 oxen, get them ready, and boil the meat. But this would not have been a 15-minute thing. Okay. So we did this, and then that like his way of saying his goodbyes to the people that he was with there. Yes, sir. Let's say something. Okay. So he left him to go with Elijah, and he follows him then from that time on. Okay. The next part, going to chapter 20 now, we've got to get two cities in mind. And again, you got to figure out where the map is here. Here's the Sea of Galilee, so Dead Sea, Jerusalem's down south of us here. Two cities to think about. Samaria here. Samaria's the capital of what? Capital of Israel. Who built it? Remember that? I'm right in, okay. A while back. And then up in the top part up here, Damascus is the capital of Syria, okay? Capital of Syria. Now, actually, from what I read, the Syria is about the same size as Israel, as far as the actual country itself in size up there.
That. Elijah
has done some traveling. Yeah, yes. Because now he's going to go from where he is down here at Mount Sinai, back up, I guess, kind of through Beersheba up that way, and go up, and he's got to get Syria and get Jehu, and he's got to get back up into Damascus area up there and find Hayden to anoint him to be king of Syria. So, number 9 at this point says, who's king of Judah at this time? What's going on in Judah? Well, we kind of left them out of the story today. What's happening in Judah? Jehoshaphat, he's still reigning. Just keep that in mind, okay? Good king, still reigning. Ben-Hadad is the king of Syria, capital of Damascus, okay? And then he has 32 kings allied with him. All right, 32 kings. Now, I don't mean there's 32 big countries, but 32 city-state type things, probably around Damascus area up there that he's got allied with him. And so he sends a message to Ahab. What did he say? I want what? Your silver and your gold, and not just your women, Bill. Be a little more specific. What did he say? Your loveliest women. Okay? He's rather particular about it. I want your silver, your gold, your loveliest women, and your children. Oh, Ahab's got a problem. Okay? So, number 10. His paper there. He agrees with him. Okay? He's got 32 kings on his side. An army there waiting. He sends a message into Samaria to Ahab and says, send me your gold, your silver, your loveliest women, and your children. What's Ahab going to do? He says, that's it. Okay. He sees those five forces out there and agrees with him. Says, okay. You can have them. But, number 10, says, Ben-Hadad's not content. What does he ask for now? We're going to come in there. We're going to find the things that we want, the things that you would prize as your best possessions. We're going to take them. Hey, I bet you think again. So, what did he do this time? What did he do this time? He said, I need some advice. So he calls the elders together and he says, look, we got a problem. Okay? We're going to stand up against them, or we're going to give them everything we got. They're going to come take what they want. And what he sends it back and says, he gets counsel, he says, your first request I agreed to, but this one, you've gone too far. I'm going to stand up and fight. Now, do you have a chance? Probably not, really. Okay? Probably not at this point. So what did Ben-Hadad tell him he's going to do to him? You notice that in there? There won't be enough dust left in Samaria or what? Every one of our, every soldier will have a handful. I'm just going to wipe it out. Okay? Annihilate. It's going to be gone. Wipe it off there. Okay. Ahab ain't done yet. What he did him? What he said? Don't count it if you got it done, old boy. Okay? He says, don't talk like one that's taking the armor off when you're putting the armor on. Don't count your chickens before they hatch, all those little stories like you hear like that. Don't count the victory until the battle's over. Now, at that time, did they have anything to base that on besides just raw gut? Not really. So what's his surprise? Okay. Number 10. How does God surprise Ahab? Prophet comes to him and says, what? You're going to win this battle. You're going to win this battle. Ahab says, great, I've been so good. No. Why? It's not something Ahab's used to. Not because of his righteousness. Against great odds. Why? So that you, Ahab, will know. Wait a minute. Was Ahab not there on Mount Carmel?
Like the rest of them, he wasn't convinced.
He didn't learn his lesson the first time. So God's going to show him a different way this time. I'm going to show him. So that you will know that I am the Lord. You will win this victory. Now, do they have no how's going to happen yet? How's it going to happen? They don't know that yet. So what does he ask next? How's it going to happen? Who's going to do this for me? What did they tell him? You are eventually. You got 232 young officers. You put them out front. How many has he got in his army? This is interesting. 7,000. What kind of armies have we talked about the last few weeks? Hundreds of thousands. Remember those? He's got 7,000 men in his army to go out there. And then he asks, okay, who's going to set the battle? Who's going to start this battle? And that's what the prophet says. You are. You're out there and do your thing. Now, what's happened to Ben-Hadad and all these other kings about this time? They're back there getting a little victory party early. Okay. They're dropped. So the scouts go out, they come back in, and they say, Ahab and his army's coming out. So what did he tell them to do? What did he tell them to do?
Go out and meet the party.
Go out and meet them.
They're peaceful.
Do what? Take them alive. If they're not peaceful, be careful. Take them alive again. Both times he says, take them alive. That's a little different, okay? So he says, take them alive. What did each one of the Israelites do? He kills the first one he comes in contact with. First he faces, he kills him. What did the rest of them do? Turned and hightailed it. Left. Ran. So God gives them a great victory that day. So, what's the lesson for Ahab? I can overcome whatever odds you got sitting there looking at you, Ahab. Any odds you want, I can overcome. Alright, two real, basically simple lessons this morning for 1 Kings 19 and 20. We've got a lot of quiet folks. We've got about 2 minutes left for some comments from somebody. Yeah, but we just had that, you know, the last couple of weeks, the size of the army. Now, is that all he's got? Is that all he had clustered together? Is that all he sent out? Is it because the city's under siege? He can't get any more help in there? I don't know exactly why the 7,000. I thought they were sure it was a small number. But what if he had 1 million men and God had led the army? Think back to Gideon. How many did God want in? He didn't need 1 million, right? So maybe that's why the 7,000's in there. God didn't need 1 million man army. They still gave Ahab that victory over there. Somebody else?
Well, yeah, part of what the issue was with Elijah. We can't trust. In the statement that Isaiah made several places and a couple of the prophets that we can give our Lord. And that's what we're not going to do. We're waiting on the Lord to do what the Lord wants to do.
Yes, ma'am.
One thing on Elijah, it came back on God.
Yeah. God killed me, or Jezebel killed me. I'm gonna die anyhow, right? It's that's all over. Yeah.
And he was not afraid of death.
Yeah.
That he did not fear what.
But he sure did run a long ways, didn't he?
God, in that when Elijah was discouraged, God did bless that.
Yeah, there's a time for rebuke. There's also a time for a positive approach. Find something to take the place of what's there. If you're in pity, get somebody a job to go do. Get them out of it that way. Jump on them and scold them. What you going to do? Possibly. You're going to drive them deeper and deeper and deeper into it.
Oh, back in my
baby. God said, take this and go up and do that. Get you busy doing something that would be beneficial for what I need to accomplish here.
Christ was a smaller class. He wouldn't have
Yeah.
There was
there was still some time to work that Elijah had to do. I mean, because the next story you see has been Hadad, not Haziel.
Yeah, right.
He's had Jehu. I mean, a couple of
he's got to go a ways yet, right.
And then Elisha even, though he goes and calls him immediately, he says the other word immediately, I think, well, still some time to pass. He's just anointed. He will be next. And God does go through with that.
Yeah, there's no way to know that this chapter 20 happened after chapter 19. This whole time he's gone, these 40 days down there, you know, with his self-pity situation here, maybe when that battle's going on up there. I mean, so those folks come to play there. We can't just say, oh, this happened, then this happened, then this happened, then this happened. That's it. Okay. That's all I got. Thank you.